Okay, good evening, everybody. Again, Erev Shabbos. Welcome back to our Pirkei Avos class learning as we prepare to prepare for Pesach, or maybe we're already preparing for Pesach. So tonight there are actually three sponsors of tonight's shiur. I am going to give the information on the sponsorship dedication in the order that I received the information. First of all, Aviva Hach and family are sponsoring L'zecher Nishmas, her nephew. I remember when I was davening for him. For a couple of years, every day, I was davening for his Refuah Shleima. So the Ribbono Shel Olam had other plans, and we believe that those tefillos brought other tzchusim, perhaps ascended with his neshama to the Olam HaEmes. So this shiur is dedicated to Zecher Nishmas Moshe Yehuda ben Meir Eliyahu, on the occasion of his second Yahrzeit. Aviva wrote that Yehuda's profound emunah and unwavering kavana when he davened, whether it was a simple bracha to tefillas ni'ilah, left a deep impression on all who knew him. May his neshama have an aliyah and the zchus of the Torah learning that we will share this evening. It is also dedicated by Susie Fahnfeder, Zecher Nishmas, her father, who I understand Miriam Goodman is your uncle. On the occasion of his 28th Yahrzeit, Yehuda ben Moshe, Alav HaShalom, he had exceptional warmth and love and a very close-knit family. He helped his parents when he was just 7 years old, selling rolls, bakery rolls, door to door. During the Holocaust, he worked in a labor camp where he worked as a baker. In the labor camp, he was able to save another Jew's life by risking his own life by beating a Nazi. For that, he was punished and hung up and beaten. As a result, he suffered from a broken jaw, and every time he chewed, it cracked. And then Susie wrote that he was extremely physically strong, which I thought maybe perhaps that's what helped him survive the beating at the hand of the Nazi. He was a big Baal Tzedakah, and when the family was sitting Shiva, they found out how many others he helped when it was Matan B'Seser. The family escaped Hungary in 1956. We left everything behind. The only thing that came was the Shabbos candlesticks. He always said he wanted his children to be Erlich HaYidden. He was very proud and respected anyone who learned Torah. He loved Yiddishkeit, Klal Yisrael, and Eretz Yisrael. May his neshama, Yehuda ben Moshe, on the occasion of his 28th Yahrzeit, merit an aliyah neshama. And finally, also sponsored by Laura Huberfeld and family, L'zecher Nishmat, her father-in-law, whose fourth Yahrzeit it is, Pinchas ben Moshe Aharon. May his neshama also, we spoke last week about bringing aliyah neshama to souls once they have ascended to the Olam HaEmes. So tonight's shiur is dedicated to three neshamas, and our Torah learning brings them aliyah. Aliyah li'ilui nishmas Pinchas ben Moshe Aharon alav hasham, and also zchus refuah for Rivka bas Sarah. We thank our past, current, and future sponsors very much. It's on you that the shiur continues to run. So I'm going to screen share now, and let us go to Pirkei Avos and see where we are up to. Right? Could you see my screen? Yes. Okay. Very good. So we have spent some time, a number of weeks, talking about Hillel. And not only the teachings of Hillel, but the life and times of Hillel. So what you can see on the screen is in Perek Aleph Mishnah Yud, we have a teaching of Shmaya and Avtalion. And now in Mishnah Yud Beis, Hillel v'Shamai kiblu mehem. So that means Hillel and Shammai received Torah teachings from Shmaya v'Avtalion. Hillel teaches Mishnah Yud Beis, Mishnah Yud Gimel, Mishnah Yud Dalet. Hillel teaches. We went through these Mishnayos in with many lessons, and now we're up to Perek Aleph, Mishnah Tes Vav, Shammai Omer. So again, Shammai and Hillel and Shammai got from Shmaya and Avtalion. And Hillel and Shammai then disseminated teachings to their students. We have spent a couple of months, perhaps, or at least 4 to 6 weeks, talking about Hillel and his teachings. And now we move on to Hillel's contemporary and partner, if you will, in Torah, and that is Shammai. So Shammai Omer, Asei Toras Chakeva, make your Torah learning permanent, and Mor Ma'at, and this Mishnah is worthy of a lot of contemplation and a lot of practical application to our lives. Asei Toras Chakeva, make your Torah learning permanent, and Mor Ma'at Ba'asei Harbei. Speak a little bit and do a lot. V'hevi mekabel es kol ha'adam b'sever panem yafos. And you should greet every person with a pleasant countenance. So before we even get into expounding upon this Mishnah, we are going to talk about the life of Shemaya. It's a very important teaching, and Be'ezrat Hashem we will get to make your Torah learning permanent, say little but do much, and greet every person that you meet with a pleasant countenance and a savor panim yafos. But like we did with Hillel, let's learn a little bit about who Shemaya was, the time that he lived in, who he received Torah from, who he passed it on to, what region did he live in. So I go back to the Sefer that we learned about Hillel from, a introduction to the Talmud history, personalities, and backgrounds. So let us talk about Shemaya. Right? I think that it's pretty well known amongst us that Hillel is known to be the more, if you will, laid back personality, and Shammai is the more charif personality. They both received the Torah teachings from Shemaya and Avtalya, and yet they had very different approaches, Hillel and Shammai. So Shammai was the Tana, was a Tana in Eretz Yisrael. He was one of the most famous of all Tanaim. He was the colleague of Hillel. When did he live? Shammai lived in the latter part of the Second Temple era. He was the chief of the Sanhedrin, and he headed a great academy known as Beis Shammai. And I think, like I thought with Hillel, these classes are very important because sometimes we throw around these names of the Tanaim and then later the Amoraim without understanding and recognizing who they were as personalities. And they really lived, and when did they live, and they were people. Here we go. Interestingly, nothing is known about Shammai's early years or his family life. It is possible that he was a builder by trade, which is actually something I recently heard from Esther Edelman. She told me a beautiful Dvar Torah on Shammai pushing the convert away on one foot, related to the fact that Shammai pushed him away with a building tool. I'll tell it to you, not tonight though. It's possible that he was a builder by trade, possible. So we don't know much about his early life, and we don't know about his family life. He's also known as Shammai Hazakein, just like Hillel was Hazakein, so too Shammai was Hazakein. He was a student, like we saw in the Mishnah, of Shemaya and of Talion. They were the two leaders of the previous generation. Now, interestingly, unlike his colleague Hillel, if you remember from the class on Hillel, Hillel moved from Babylon to Israel, from Babel to Eretz Yisrael later in life. Unlike his colleague Hillel, Shammai was not Babylonian, and he remained in Eretz Yisrael during the years of conflict. So it was a very turbulent political time during the latter part of the Second Temple era. We tend to think that the time of the Beis HaMikdash, everything was wonderful, and it was utopia, and it was Gan Eden, and only when the Beis HaMikdash was actually set on fire, then everything became chaotic. But the reality is that the years leading up to the Churban were very turbulent political years. And during this time of great conflict, in the latter part of the Second Temple era, Shammai remained in Eretz Yisrael, so he lived through a time of great turbulence. He established the great academy of Beis Shammai. So when we talk about Beis Hillel does this way and Beis Shammai does that way, we're talking about the yeshiva or the academy that Shammai established. It attracted some of the greatest Torah scholars of that generation. So he was notably one of, you could say in today's language, one of the Gedolei Hador. One of his most notable students is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Among the exceptional sages who were educated in his academy in later generations were Rabbi Eliezer and, according to some, Rabbi Tarfon. So he was a very great Torah personality. He remained in Eretz Yisrael. It was a very difficult time. This is the time of the Roman rule and dominion over the land. And there was a lot of politics and there was a lot of turbulence. I didn't read this when in my preparation. I also looked at Rabbi Lau. He gives a history of the Tanaim who are quoted. But perhaps it helps us understand, in a sense, why he was Harif. And in a time of great political turmoil, when there is so much permissiveness, and there is so much influence from the Romans, and there is so much lewdness, and there is so much danger, sometimes the proper reaction is that we have to tighten the reins in order to hold on to Torah and Yiddishkeit, to stay true to Torah in such a dangerous political, spiritual, environmental environment. We need to tighten the reins and stay very strong in our Torah. And perhaps that's why part of his approach was to be very harif in his approach to Torah, to counteract what was going on politically and environmentally in the land at the time. This is interesting. Okay, for a period of five generations during Bais Sheni, the Jewish people were led by pairs of sages. They were known as zugos, literally pairs. You give someone a bracha, they should find their zivug hagun bekarov. Who led the people for five generations during the era of Bais Sheni, the Second Temple? They were known as sages, known as zugos, pairs. One sage of each pair served as the nasi, the president of the Sanhedrin, the highest Jewish court, and the other pair of the Zug was the Av Beis Din, who was the deputy to the Nasi, not Nasi, deputy to the Nasi. Hillel and Shammai were the last of the Zugos. They were the last of the pairs. So again, during five generations, during the era of Second Temple period, the Jewish people were led by pairs or zugos. One was the Nasi, the president of the Sanhedrin. The other was the Av Beis Din, the chief of the Sanhedrin, who was deputy of the Nasi, not Nasi. Oh. Hillel and Shammai were the last of these zugos. When did they flourish? Ready? Very close to Churban Bais Sheni. They flourished about 100 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. So they really lived very much towards the end of the Second Temple period. They were the last of the Zugos. Hillel was the Nasi, and Shammai was the Av Beis Din, and they flourished about 100 years before Churban Bais Sheni. Originally, Hillel shared the pair, the leadership, with a sage named Menachem, but Menachem resigned after a brief period, and Hillel now became the Zug with Shammai, who took over. They did have occasional disputes, and perhaps this is what Hillel and Shammai are most famous for, unfortunately. Hillel and Shammai, though, had tremendous respect for each other, and they led the nation seamlessly during one of the most turbulent periods in our history and one of the most turbulent periods during Bais Sheni. So then we always say Beis Shammai says like this, Beis Hillel says like this. What you're going to see is it's their students who were embroiled in many amachlokas, we could say l'shem Shemayim, but Hillel and Shammai themselves, even though they had a very different approach, demeanor, personality, approach to halacha and Torah. The convert says to Shammai, teach me Torah while I stand on one foot, Shabbos 31a, and Shammai pushes him away with the building tool. And Hillel says, oh, you know what? I'm going to teach it to you. A tefill to your friend, a tefill to you, don't do unto your friend. So they had very different approaches. However, they had great respect for each other, and they led seamlessly during one of the most turbulent periods of the Second Temple era. And I think we learned something, a tremendous Musar Haskalah. A tremendous Musar Haskalah. We also live in a very turbulent political times. We are in Galus. We do not have full reign and dominion over Eretz Yisrael, even though we have Medina, Baruch Hashem. It's not the ultimate Geula, that's for sure. And Hillel and Shammai themselves, I'm not talking about the academies of Hillel and Shammai, but Hillel and Shammai themselves teach us that even if we have a different approach, of course, according to our Das Torah, we can still have tremendous respect for a fellow Jew, even if the approach is different. And it's interesting because it relates to Pesach. Rabbi Lau writes in his Haggadah, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau Shlita, a beautiful Haggadah that I think I've recommended it before. I think it's out of print. Anyway, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau Shlita, around the Seder table. And he says, Motzi Matzah, I've tried brought down other places as well. Motzi Matzah means to take out the matzah. Motzi, Lahotzi. Matzah, what's matzah? Matzah means strife. Matzah also means strife. In Aramaic, matzah means strife, quarrel, dissent, machlokas. Motzi matzah, if you want to know how you could come to celebrate Pesach, take out the strife, take out the machlokas, take out the quarrel from your fellow Jews. So despite occasional disputes, Hillel and Shammai had tremendous respect for each other, and they ruled seamlessly over the Jewish people as Nasi and Av Beis Din during one of the most turbulent periods in our history. Hillel was very humble, and he often considered Shammai superior to him. The Talmud relates in several places where Hillel seemingly acquiesced to Shammai to avoid confrontation. The Gemara tells us in Masechah Shabbos he would sit submissively before Shammai as if he were his student, even though Hillel really had the greater position. Hillel was the Nasi, and Shammai was the Av Beis Din, but Hillel went to such great length to avoid Machlokas, and he was so exceedingly humble, he would sit in front of Shammai as if he were his Talmud. So we see that two Jews can disagree, and still have great respect and get along. So from the life of Shammai, it's not just history. It's also a very important lesson in Bein Adam Mechavero, which is the main focus of Pirkei Avos. And what does Shammai himself say? Hevi mekabel es kol ha'adam b'sever panim yafos. I'm going to take a break from the history lesson for a moment. Remember, it's Shammai, who's the Harif one, who says, Hevi mekabel es kol ha'adam b'sever panim yafos. So you can imagine, if Shammai, who's Harif, teaches you have to greet every person with a pleasant countenance, and look at the great lengths that Hillel and Shammai went to avoid machlokas. I'm not talking about yet about their talmidim, I'm talking about they themselves. Then we realize that this is the absolute letter of the law. The letter of the law is to learn how to treat every person with a pleasant countenance, even if halachically, or you could say today hashkafically, you do not agree. I'm not saying you necessarily have to agree. Everyone might have their own Das Torah, as long as it's authentic Das Torah. But you have to make sure that you are motzi matzah. Remove the strife. So I'm quoting again from the Parsha book of Rav Yaakov Bender, which you know I'm enjoying very, very much. I've quoted it in many a class, including Shir this morning. One second, I just want to turn to the page where I want to turn to. Okay. So he quotes a beautiful, beautiful piece. I love the Sefer, as you've heard me say previously. So in Parshas Baha'aloscha, okay, in Parshas Baha'aloscha, the people, Bamidbar, Perek Yud Aleph, the people begin complaining. They're complaining, okay? Jews like to complain, I'm sorry. It's a part of our history. We need to learn how to not complain. The people were like complainers. They were seeking pretext. They complained badly. In the ears of God, our souls are sick. We have nothing to eat. We only have this man. It's enough. Rashi says, there is nothing except man. That's what the people said. We're nauseous from the man. We're complaining about the man. Hashem said the man was round like a coriander seed. Rashi says, Re'u ba'e olam ama mislonanim banai. Re'u ba'e olam. See all inhabitants of the world, says God. Ama mislonanim banai. Look about what my children are complaining about. Rav Yaakov Bender says, or he writes, one of the memorable shmuzin of Rav Avram Yaakov Pam Zatzal, centered on these words of Rashi: Ru'u ba'e olam ama mislonanim banai. See the inhabitants of the world, what my children complain about. He would talk about all the blessings all around us. He would talk about the chesed, which is showered upon us in life, and how people persist in finding things to argue and complain about all the same. In a pained voice, Rav Pam, he was a Shiva of Yeshiva Torah Vadas in New York, Brooklyn. The Rosh Yeshiva described a father coming home. I thought this was so powerful. In a pained voice, when Rav Pam gave the shmooze, he described a father coming home from work to a messy home. And now Erev Pesach, maybe like me, all your chametz is sitting in a corner in a box, and there's groceries here, and you went Pesach shopping today, and you had to call your husband to come help you in the store because there's no way I could do this by myself, and he didn't have a car, and he had to walk to the grocery to come save you. And you come home, the father comes home to a messy home. There's toys strewn all over the floor. Today you could say there's chametz in this area, there's Pesach in this area. He is angry, and he complains to the wife over the lack of order. Rav Pam exclaimed, the cry of Re'u ba'e olam ama mislonanim banai rings in my ears. There are couples waiting for years to have children. Their homes are in perfect order. There's not one book moved out of place. There are no children's toys or shoes or snacks anywhere to be seen. And you complain because you come home to a messy home. The Rosh Yeshiva gave another example. A child comes home from school. The supper table is beautifully set. A large platter of tuna fish. The mother has added vegetable sticks around the tuna to add visual appeal and nutrients. And the boy looks at it and he says, tuna? Again? It still echoes, says Rav Pam, Ru'u, ba'e olam, ama mislonanim banai. See the inhabitants of the world, what my children are complaining about. The mother worked hard. She's waiting for supper for her son. But he does not see how fortunate he is to have a doting mother and fresh food, just that there's tuna fish. Again, it's funny because one day this week, one of the kids, I warmed up something for part of the supper in the microwave. So when I took it out of the microwave, this particular child said, it's going to taste like saran wrap, because I did saran and I double covered it and It's going to take 6 rams. So I said, you know what? I'm going to read you something from a Bender Sefer on the Parsha. I said, because look what's in front of you. Look at all this delicious food. And what you're saying is, it's going to taste like saran wrap. Rav Pam spoke about the father, the term, okay, I'm skipping that example. He gave another example. And the reason I'm bringing this to you, besides for the fact that I think it's a tremendous word, and it's Musar Haskel, forget the kids, it's Musar Haskel for us. We also complain, look at our lives. And we're saying to Hashem, I need this, I need that, I want this, I want that, I'm lacking this, I'm lacking that. What about, wow, look how much good we have in our lives. However, I'm bringing it to you now specifically because now he talks about machlokas. So the springboard for going to this insight is the fact that Hillel and Shammai themselves, not Beis Hillel, I cannot believe it's 822, not holy moly, not Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, but Hillel and Shammai themselves, even though they did disagree, they had tremendous respect. And because they had tremendous respect, as Nasi and Av Beis Din, they were the last of the Zugos. They were 100 years before, they flourished 100 years before the Churban, even though it was the most turbulent period because of the Roman rule in the land, they were able to seamlessly lead the nation with Shalom. Only two people who get along can seamlessly lead anybody else. Okay, another example. Parents who merit walking a child to the chuppah. It is the climax of years of hopes and prayers. The parents are missing the joy and glory of the moment. They are locked in a petty battle over some small detail. Should the chassan and kal walk down with the parents? Should they walk down with two fathers? Should they walk down with two mothers? Should they have flowers here? Should they have flowers there? It's coronavirus. Unfortunately, I just heard two cases this week. This is not an exaggeration or a joke, where a chassan has became anything but simchas between the mechatonim this past year. And when I hear about these situations, said Rav Pam, I hear the bas kol that rings out from Shemayim, Ru'u ba'ei olam, ama mislonanim banai. It's unfortunate to see people falling into this trap. I remember attending a wedding on a busy night. I arrived at 10:30. The chuppah was just finishing. It turned out the mechatonim had been arguing about who would walk the children down the aisle. The guests were kept waiting for over an hour as the mechatonim tried to find common ground. Aside from the dangers of machlokas, which is why I'm bringing this to you, if we can somehow learn to respect each other despite differences, we too can lead ourselves, our lives, our children, our families, impact our communities. We too are in turbulent times. Aside from the dangers of machlokas, aside from the negative message the parents fighting sends to this new couple beginning their marriage, aside from the disrespect to the assembled guests, what about the ingratitude to the Borei Olam that you were zocha to celebrate the simcha of marrying off your child? When Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal was asked, what's the proper way for parents to walk the children down to the chuppah? Should it be two fathers, two mothers, or the father-mother and the father-mother? He said, you know, he walked three of his children to the chuppah along with his wife, and three of his children with his mechotin, and the mothers walked the daughter. So they said, so what's your custom? You did three this way, you did three that way. He said, you know what my custom is? Three of the machatunim wanted it this way. Three of the machatunim wanted it the other way. That, says Rav Bender, was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's minhag. Whatever you want, however you want, it's a detail. Whatever you did, I'm not judging. I have not yet been in this situation, but we have to become giborim to recognize the greater goal here. Making a simcha can be stressful, but people, he writes, with refined midos, understand special moments call for greatness of spirit. Hillel and Shammai, despite their differences, ezi mechoka shehi l'shem shemayim, were leading the people in the era leading up to the Churban. It was a politically unstable, dangerous, difficult time. And it requires true gavos, courage, to overcome whatever difference is. Hillel would sit, even though he was greater as the Nasi, and Shammai was the Av Beis Din. Excuse me. Hillel would sit at the feet of Shammai as if he were his student. What's my minhag, says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky? My minhag was three mechatonim wanted this way, so that's what we did. And the other three wanted this way, so that's what we did. I'm skipping a little bit. This is a famous story. Rabbi Bender ends his piece with this story, which is a famous story. There was a large, or and by the way, everything we're learning in this piece from Rabbi Bender really relates to Shammai's own teaching of Heve Makabel as Kol HaAdam B'Sever Panim Yafos. There was a large, this is a famous story, I'm sure you've heard it elsewhere. There was a large orphanage in Bnei Brak filled with young women who had survived the Shoah. On Shabbos, they would sing Zmiros, the windows would be open, and their singing, the sounds of their voices, wafted out into the street. One of the neighbors was furious. He had to hear Kol Isha. He came to the Chazon Ish, and he told them, the women are singing, and it's wafting out to the street, and I hear Kol Isha. The Chazon Ish smiled. He said, Yesomos, they lost their parents, their whole families. They went through the Gehenim, and here they are a few years later. Unzai zingin shine, they are already singing. How wonderful. Thank you for telling me this good news. Concludes Rabbi Bender, there are so many more reasons to say thank you than to complain. See, inhabitants of the world, over what my children complain, but it's not only a degree of ingratitude to the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's also, of course, all of those examples, how we treat our fellow men. And can we overcome differences to be b'shalom? Hey, ve Shammai. Shammai, he was harif. Shammai says, I'm going to tell you what the letter of the law is. The letter of the law is, hey, ve mekabel, it's called them, b'sever panim yafos. That's how you have to live your life as a Jew. That's how you lead with peace. That's how you are a manhig of Yisrael during the most turbulent time in our history, in the years, in the century preceding the Churban. Going back to the history of Shammai's life, very powerful. According to Sefer Yuchasin, Shammai was originally a student of Hillel and then rose to become his equal. However, others hold no. Shammai established his yeshiva. He was older than Hillel, and he established his yeshiva many years before Hillel. So you see that there is discrepancy, and the early years of his life are very unclear. Very little of Shammai's own teachings have come down to us. So we have a lot of teachings from Beis Shammai, the academy that he established, but very little of Shammai's teachings himself. Moreover, he himself rarely disagreed with Hillel. Like we have seen, Hillel was sitting in front of Shammai, Shammai was sitting in front of Hillel. They worked it out. They didn't want to have the machlokas. They would run as far away as they could. Their students, however, who were not on the lofty level of their teachers, did not sufficiently analyze their master's teachings. And you could say that their students perhaps did not sufficiently analyze their master's way of life. As a result, they did not fully appreciate, understand the logic of their teachers, and it resulted in many halachic disputes. So when we talk about the disputes of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, the reason is because Hillel and Shammai themselves did not have much machlokas between the two of them, because what they strove for and in their leadership was leading the people with tranquility as much as could be possible in a time of great turbulence. I'm skipping a little bit. I'm skipping. Even though I planned to say it, I marked it. I am skipping. Okay. Notwithstanding the countless disputes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, a spirit of brotherhood and respect pervaded the relationship. So now when we talk about the Talmidim, even though they had much machlokas, much more than Shammai and Hillel themselves, the Talmidim still had great respect for each other, despite their differences. Since their intention was to arrive at their truth, what they were seeking was the truth, a machlokas that is l'shem shamayim, they were able to avoid animosity. In the words of the Mishnah, this is quoting from the Mishnah, I'm quoting from this sefer, even though the school forbade certain marriages, and this school permitted those marriages. So Beis Shammai said that marriage is forbidden. And Beis Hillel said, no, no, that marriage is permitted. This school disqualified certain people from marrying Kohanim, and this school said these people could marry Kohanim. Nevertheless, Beis Shammai did not refrain from marrying the woman of Beis Hillel's household, and Beis Hillel did not refrain from marrying the woman of Beis Shammai's household. That's very strong. They totally did not agree in halacha. You know, you want to make sure that there's something in tandem with the house you're marrying into, with the mechatunim. I was just listening today. I had a drive today to an appointment. So I was listening to Shir Rabbi Shai Shechter, and he said, it came to Rav Hershel Shechter's Shlita, you have a shayla. What if, it comes to Rabbanim all the time, what if an Ashkenazi marries a Sephardi? An Ashkenazi woman marries a Sephardi woman. An Ashkenazi woman marries a Sephardi man. And now she's going to go to his house, or she's going to start his own house. And it's very strange. She's going to put rice on the table. She's going to put corn on the table. What is this? I never had this. Is a chametz. It feels very strange. So it sometimes happens that people from two different total hashkafas will get together. And of course, we have to work this out. And there's nothing wrong with it. And she marries into a Sephardi family. And that's the custom. And that's it. But in this case, even though Beis Shammai would say this kind of marriage is forbidden, and Beis Hillel would say this kind of marriage is permitted, and Beis Shammai would say this woman is forbidden to marry a Kohen, and Beis Hillel would say she's permitted. So they had strong machlokas. The Talmidim didn't hesitate to make shidduchim within the academies. And that's very strong. They were willing to overlook machlokas for the sake of harmony, for the sake of shalom bayis, for the sake of puruv ruim milos ha'aretz, for the sake of lo tov ha'eos adam levado. It didn't ruin the shidduch. It wasn't a problem. It wasn't one of the questions on the list. They were able to look past and be mishadich with each other. Unbelievable. Likewise, one side said this item is tahar. The other side said this item is tamei. Nevertheless, they didn't refrain from preparing tahar foods on utensils belonging to the other. My gosh, you eat kebrachs, and I'm never going to use your dishes. How could you think I could use your dishes? Even the Shai that came, so let's say it was very interesting. He was quoting his father's Situr of Herschel Schechter that this year many students, let's say, can't get back to America for Pesach. So they're scrambling to find places to go for meals. Everyone should ask their own Shai. I'm not paskening anything. I'm relating something I heard. Obviously, if you have a Shai, you should ask it. So let's say they find a meal with a Sfarisha family, and you're talking about someone from Ashkenazi descent. So there's going to be rice on the table and beans. I don't know exactly what to serve there, and there's going to be corn. So what should they do? So because it's considered a shas harchak, and they need somewhere to eat for Pesach, and kidneyos, according to the Gemara, rice absolutely can never become chametz, so it's absolutely no problem. And Rav Yosef Karo writes, the Ashkenazim have a minhag tipesh, and even tinoko shall base rabbana know the difference between rice flour and wheat flour, so there's absolutely no problem here, but for the Ashkenazim, it's a very strong minhag. It only goes back about 500 years, and we're not over on this minhag, but in a shas harchak, if an Ashkenazi has nowhere to eat on Pesach, and he has to eat in a Sfarish home, so he shouldn't eat the kidneyos, because we don't hold of the kidneys, but it's not a problem to eat on those plates and on those pots and to eat food that is not kidneys, so it's prepared in kidneys. I'm not even talking about gebracht, I'm talking about kidneys. Okay, for Ashkenazim, chumas, bambai, he said his father got a shayla. A woman called and she cooked corn in her Pesach pots. The kids were hungry, it was Erev Pesach, she cooked corn, and the husband was freaking out. It's chametz, you cook corn or Pesach pots, what are you doing? Rabbi Yosef said it's fine. It's not chametz. It's clear from the Gemara. It can't be chametz. So interestingly, I thought it was very interesting when I was preparing this. Even though one side may have considered certain items tahor, ritually pure, and the other side considered them tamei, ritually impure, neither of them refrained from preparing tahor foods on utensils belonging to the other. So what they were really showing is that they respected the position of the other. Even though I can use your dishes, I trust you, even though I might not hold like you, I trust you and I could use your dishes. In every instance, the students of the school would notify the other if the marriage or the utensil met their halachic standard. They were open with each other. They would say, this is how you halachically paskan, this is how we halachically paskan. It didn't ruin shidduchim. It didn't ruin eating in someone else's house. It didn't ruin anybody's reputation. So even the students of Hillel and Shammai had many, many more machlokas, hundreds of machlokas, that their rabbanim, Hillel and Shammai, as personalities, did not have. But nevertheless, the key thing to take out of this year is respect for the fellow Jew, even when you don't agree, which is exactly what Shammai teaches us in our Mishnah, Perak Av, Mishnah Tesvav, Heve Mikabel es kol ha'adam, b'sever panam yaf es kol ha'adam. Does it mean you eat kidneys and he doesn't? You eat gebrachs and he doesn't? You think it's okay and he doesn't? Heve Mikabel es kol ha'adam, b'sever panam yaf. It's the only way to get through galus. It's the only way to show leadership. It's the only way that the Ribbono Shel Olam will bring us back. Motzi Matzah. If you want to celebrate the Pesach properly, you have to remove all strife, says Rabbi Lau. This teaches you that they treated each other with love and friendship in fulfillment of the verse in Zechariah, love, truth, and peace. So I'm going to end, one second. Oh, so that's very interesting what Malki Sultan just posted, because Rabbi Schechter addressed this. My mother, who came from a Hasidic family, said when they were in the ghetto and they were starving, it was Paschim, they could eat kinyas. So you have to understand that kinyas is not chametz. So Rabbi Schechter was saying, if there is a chola, even if it's not Imbo Sakana, who needs kinyas, you could eat kinyas. He went even further. He used the example of people in the Holocaust, Rachman al-Assan, who the only thing they had all day was one stale piece of bread. So what did they have to do? They had to eat the bread. I'm not even talking about kinyas. To eat kinyas in a Shas Harchak, there's no shayla. It's not chametz. But what we had to do, he said, so what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to eat the chametz. V'chai behem v'lo shei mus behem. So I'm going to quote, end with a different vignette from Rabbi Bender in this same sefer. One second, let me just turn. I put in the sticky where I want to go to. And that sometimes we have to be mavir al midosai for the sake of peace for somebody else. Interesting. Hillel means to praise, halal. And Shammai is shame. Shin Mem is the name. And then Yud Aleph represents shame Hashem. So when we praise someone else, we have the ability to bring shame Hashem down into this world. Even if you don't agree. I'm not saying you should neglect your Das Torah, Chas V'Sham. I'm not saying you should stray from the path of the Torah. Neither did Hillel, neither did Shammai. But while they disagreed, they learned to be Motzi Matzah for the sake of Shalom, Sefer Panim Yafos, leadership, and to maintain integrity in Knesset Yisrael as much as possible. What's your custom? They said to Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, whatever the Mechatunim wanted. That's my custom. I'm going to end with this. Recently, a young man who now lives in Lakewood, an alumni of Yeshiva Darchei Torah, alumnus of Yeshiva Darchei Torah, came to share a story with me. He had been, keep in mind everything we spoke about today, he had been in second grade in Yeshiva Darchei Torah. He was in second grade. He took out a snack by recess. It was a chocolate bar he brought along from home. He broke it into two. Listen to the story.
Who's it about?
Listen to this story. You know Rabbi Saldinger?
Yeah.
Listen to this story. This boy was a Talmud in second grade in Yeshiva Darchei Torah, and by recess he took out a snack. It was a chocolate bar he brought along from home. He broke it in two. He was happily eating when he realized people were laughing at him. He looked up and he saw classmates surrounded him, and they were mocking him as a shegetz because it was chocolate that wasn't Chal Visra. I say it's tar, you say it's tame. I say she's permitted, you say she's forbidden. I say it's kinyas, you say it's fine. Gebracht, not gebracht. And they're making fun of this two-year, second-grade boy because he's eating chocolate that's not a Chav Yisrael. The mocking continued, and the boy sat there helplessly. His Rebbe grasped immediately what was happening, and he hurried over. The Rebbe said to the boy, can I see that one second? Could you please stop? Because it's making noise. The Rebbe said to the boy, can I see that for a minute? And he took the chocolate bar from the boy. The Rebbe, Rabbi Eliyahu Saldinger, am I saying the name right?
No.
How do you say it?
Saldinger.
Saldinger?
Yeah.
The Rebbe, Rabbi Eliyahu Saldinger, lifted up the chocolate, opened his eyes, and made a bracha, shahakal, with enthusiasm, and took a bite of the chocolate bar. The chocolate bar that was not Chal Visra. It was the first time in 18 years that Rabbi Saldinger had eaten Chal of Stam. But he did not hesitate, because someone's kavod was at stake. Decades later, the boy recalled that moment and told me that in second grade, Rabbi Saldinger, with his decision, eating his chocolate, changed his life. If we can grasp Hillel, Hallel, to praise others, even if we don't agree, and we can be motzi matzah, we can remove strife, and you eat gebracht, and I don't, and you eat kidneys, and I don't. And we can learn to see past our differences, to behave a mekabel as kol ha'adam, b'sever panim yafus. Then truly, shame ka, we will be zocha to bring the name Shammai of the Ribbono Shel Olam into this world. Alvai we should be zocha that the shalom that we strive for and cultivate will bring the ultimate geula. May the neshama of Moshe Yehuda ben Meir Eliyahu merit an aliyah neshama. May the neshama of Yehuda ben Moshe merit an aliyah neshama. May the neshama of Pinchas ben Moshe Aaron, interesting, Pinchas, Moshe Aaron, three men who strove for shalom, merit an aliyah neshama. And may Rivka Basar merit a refuah shleima b'soch she'ar chalei. So I thank everyone for learning with me. Be'azor Hashem, one more shir. Then we break for Yom Tov. Have a wonderful Shabbos. And again, Chodesh to all. Thank you so much, everybody. Kol Tov. Thank you. Thank you.